Utah's 3rd District Representative John Curtis announced yesterday that he will indeed be running for the U.S. Senate seat being vacated by Senator Mitt Romney. Now, Congressman Curtis was elected to Congress in November of 2017. His district currently includes eastern Utah counties from Daggett to San Juan to the south. And many of these counties, of course, are energy-producing counties. Over the past years, he has served our industrial communities well in the Uinta Basin. From his position on the House Energy and Commerce Committee and the House Natural Resources Committee, he is also chair of the Conservative Caucus and the Congressional, and he serves on the Congressional Coal Caucus. Congressman Curtis, welcome to KVEL.
Thank you, Steve. It's something we've done over the last few years, and I've enjoyed every time we've talked.
Well, we've enjoyed our conversations as well. I want to jump right into it. The question on everyone's mind is why the change? Why, with your approval rating, where it is, you were all but assured a re-election win in the House. Why the change?
You know, I think there's a number of reasons. I think one that's perhaps the most relevant to the constituents in the basin is the frustration that I have had knowing that so much of the policy is established in the Senate, and by the time it comes to me in the House, I get a thumbs up or a thumbs down vote on it, and not feeling like I'm having as much impact as I would like to on substantial policy, particularly as it relates to energy policy. We're talking permitting reform right now, and I'm just watching all these conversations over the Senate and wishing that I had a bigger hand in them. And so that's a big piece of it. The reality of it is I think I'm better able to serve the constituents on everything from veterans issues to IRS issues to passport issues, just because there's 100 senators and 435 members of Congress. And if we're honest, they get a little better service from some of those government agencies.
If you are elected senator, if you become our next senator for Utah, what will some of your goals be, your priorities?
Yeah, I would really like to take across the state this concept of the energy policy that I've had so much fun working on in the basin, and that is just how critical Utah's energy sector is to the success, not just of Utah, not just to the country, but really to the world. And I know sometimes the fossil fuels are demonized, and I'm trying to turn that around. I'm trying to help people understand that you guys are part of the solution, not the problem. And we need you, and we need the people and the innovation and the leadership that comes from the energy sector in the state. And I'm just hopeful we can take that statewide and just instead of just in the district.
I'd like to circle back on the Conservative Climate Caucus. What was the idea behind it? And was it an educational tool? Is there legislation that you can motivate the conception of? What was the nucleus of that?
The nucleus was, as I was listening to the conversations, I could just tell that conservatives were at a tremendous disadvantage because they weren't willing to talk about climate. And I get it, but just the word climate, right, is not a good word to conservatives.
Well, most conservatives go, what?
Yeah.
Put on the brakes.
Extremism, bad ideas. But there's a couple of things that happen when we react that way. One is we're not at the table for discussion. We refuse, we typically turn away and say, no, we don't even want to be involved in these conversations. But the reality of it is you can't delineate between climate policy and energy policy. So by turning our back on climate policy, we've also been turning our back on energy policy. And as a result, we're headed the same direction as Europe. And nobody will know better than the folks in the basin. They don't frack in Europe. And there's people here in the United States would say, we shouldn't frack here. They don't, they shut down their nuclear. And there are people here in the United States that say we should shut down our nuclear. It's moving in the exact wrong direction. And conservatives are not at that table because we don't want to talk climate. We don't get invited into those discussions. So mission number one was to turn that narrative so that conservatives will at that table. Look, just 15 years ago, Europe produced as much natural gas as Russia, and Europe decided they were too good to frack. And nobody was at that table to push back and say that's a bad idea. And today, Europe buys fracked natural gas from an enemy. And so the Conservative Climate Caucus is basically saying, look, as conservatives, we want a seat at the table. And we care about clean just as much as anybody else, but we're going to push back on ideas that are what I call take your head off to fix your headache ideas. The second thing is it's a branding problem for Republicans. It comes across that we somehow don't care about the earth, and I know that's absolutely not true. I think the folks in Utah care deeply, especially rural Utah, care deeply about the earth. And so the caucus was created to educate Republicans and make them feel more comfortable in the climate discussion and arm them with ideas and solutions that actually are fit right in line with conservative values, but, believe it or not, actually reduce more emissions than what's already being proposed. And so that's what we do at the Conservative Climate Caucus, is we get Republicans engaged and at that climate table so that our solutions are heard. And I can give you some marvelous examples of us being able to move that needle in that direction.
What are some of the examples? What are some of the successes that we've had?
So this is like, there's an international conference on climate, and Republicans, most of them have never even heard of it. It's called COP. It's held internationally every year. This year, it was in an oil-producing nation. So we had the chance as conservatives, as Republicans, to go there and to show how these fossil fuels are actually part of the solution and not the problem. And that is like just a perfect example. And for instance, we produce natural gas here in the United States 40% cleaner than Russia. Well, if you want to reduce emissions, we should be exporting U.S. natural gas to replace Russian natural gas around the world. That one idea alone reduces more emissions than the Green New Deal. And yet Republicans haven't really felt confident, if that makes sense, in pushing that message. And so that's just one example. Another example I'd give you is at the same international conference just 3 years ago, nuclear was considered unacceptable. Well, we pushed back, and today nuclear is back in the vernacular, and people realize it's an important part of our energy mix. And if we're not at that table having those discussions, nobody is pushing these ideas that conservatives feel very strongly about.
The Conservative Climate Caucus, what happens when if you become elected to Senate and lead the House?
That was a big deal to me because I created this, and it's now one of the largest caucuses in Washington. I didn't want it to fall apart. Just about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I approached 6 members of the caucus and asked them to be vice chairs, and then one of those to be my replacement. So we've got leadership in place. People are very excited. I was kind of asked a little bit sheepishly, hey, will you come be my vice chair, because I know it's a lot of work. Every one of them said I would be honored, and they're proud to be part of the Conservative Climate Caucus. So it will live on. There's also a Conservative Climate Foundation that has run parallel to it. That helps members travel and go to places like this international conference. So I'm confident it will live on and be an important part in the House.
Is this something that you can carry on, at least in spirit, in the Senate?
Absolutely in spirit. It will take a little different form. They don't have caucuses quite the same way they do in the House, so it will take a little different form. But I think the Senate, too, needs to better learn how, as Senate conservatives, need to better learn how to talk about this. And go on what I would call the offensive and not the defensive on our message. And I don't think conservatives need to take a backseat to anyone on our goal to be good stewards over the earth. And I think we can show that we have very good ideas that do just that.
Representative Curtis, if you were to win election and become our next senator, what about the synergy with other members of the Utah delegation, including Senator Mike Lee? There seems to be a real disconnect between the Romney camp and Mike Lee on fundamental policy issues.
So that's unfortunate, because Utah needs to swing above its weight, and the best way for us to swing above our weight is that synergy that you referred to. And I will tell you this: we've worked with Senator Lee and Senator Romney on a number of different bills and issues, and I have tremendous respect for both of their offices. And so, given the opportunity to work with Senator Lee, I have no doubt we will find that synergy, because we have. We've worked on bills together. We find, he and I are different, just as Senator Romney and I are different. But we find those interests in the state where we absolutely agree. And trust me, there's far more of those than not. And I think my track record working with Senator Lee in the House will show that we would have a great synergistic relationship.
Public lands. I know that's a subject as being on the House Natural Resources Committee that you're very familiar with and have been active with. As you know, huge swaths of land was taken, 317 miles of trails in Grant County, and giant swaths of land are being shut down by the BLM. No grazing, no recreation, etc. Now, there's ranchers and grazers here in the Uinta Basin that are or will be affected as well. It's just a trend that we think or are fearful that it will continue to go forward. Recent BLM land closures in Sweetwater County, Wyoming, just to the north of us here, have caused the removal of generational cattle grazing permits on public lands. 8 Uinta Basin ranchers, I have been told, have been running cattle on these newly restricted lands, and many of them are going to put them out of business. How do we put a stop to that?
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, I think this is one of my strengths. I didn't go to Congress to be an expert on public lands, but all of a sudden I found myself in the middle of Bears Ears and Emery County public lands. And of my rural counties, they're all about 80% federal lands. And so I know this issue very well. And I know that to answer your question is we must push back. I was successful in getting a bill through the House a couple of weeks ago that actually repeals the BLM ruling that allows them set aside land for conservation. Now we have to get that through the Senate. We have to get the president to sign it. And to do that, I need help with a different president and a different Senate, right? Because they're not going to go along with that. But we've got to be on our game, pushing back on these federal agencies. And nobody knows that better than the person who's had CD3 for the last 3 years, because there's so many federal lands issues in my district, and I look forward to joining those fights and pushing back and saying that's just wrong.
Do you see a disconnect on the east side of your district? Includes Sandy, and then you go all the way down to Lehigh, Provo, and Orem.
Yeah.
Are you seeing a disconnect with public lands management and the perception that the citizens in that part of your district have versus, say, the Uinta Basin?
I think it's very hard for them to understand public lands. They hear public lands and they think of Arches National Park, right, and some of these things. And they, of course, want to preserve and protect Arches, like all of us do. But it's hard for them to really understand what it's like to try to get a grazing permit or, you know, some of these issues that you're talking about in the basin. And so I'm not sure if it's a disconnect other than it's just something that they don't deal with and it doesn't impact their lives and their livelihoods the way it does in the basin. And quite frankly, it makes it harder for me to get support. And it's even worse. You know, it's one thing for the people in Sandy to understand this, but imagine what it's like for my colleagues on the East Coast. And they like to stand up and say they have rural, and they like to stand up and say they have public lands. And I just laugh at them. I said, look, if you want to see rural, come to Utah, right? You don't have rural. And they think they have public lands because they have a park of 100 acres, right, that's public, right, in their state. And we have millions of acres. And so my colleagues across the country, particularly, you know, east of the Mississippi, just don't understand these dynamics and what we're dealing with here. And they tend to way oversimplify these issues. And there's a group I belong to. It's called the Western Caucus. And we join together as Western states to push back on this. And the more we can unite our voices, the more powerful we become.
It seems like people in the liberal spectrum, including our environmental friends, our extremist friends, are really quick to exaggerate any perceived negative. For example, they will use pictures of Arches National Monument and put an oil well, oil rig in front of it. And that's the perception that people are having. And they're using that as a tool to raise money to fight things like our Uinta Railway.
It's so true. I've seen pictures of a coal plant with steam coming off, labeled pollution, right? Mm-hmm. And they are. They're deceptive, and they don't really, they're not, now, there are some good people, and I meet those, so I don't want to put everybody in this category, but there are some who will use nothing, that won't stop at any morals or ethics to try to destroy the way of life of people who, don't let me offend all the people in the basin, but who are the original environmentalists, right?
Right.
You guys don't like to be called the environmentalists, but you are the original environmentalists. You care deeply about this earth. Your livelihoods depend on this earth and taking care of it. And that needs to be better appreciated and better articulated.
Deseret Power in your district here in Bonanza, Utah, is one of the cleanest power facilities in the nation. And Boy, if anyone wants a tour through that facility, if you're concerned about environmental hazard of what's coming out of coal-fired power plants, do some homework, right?
Exactly. And I have toured that facility, and you're absolutely right. And not only are they very clean, they're continuing to clean at higher and higher levels all the time. And I hear, you know, reports of zero emissions that we can get these coal plants down to. And let's say I think it's a mistake for us to not talk about being clean because we're working so hard, and also agree that less pollution is better than more pollution.
Right.
I think we're just a little bit more realistic about it and practical about it.
Senator Lee has introduced legislation that would prevent the government shutdown of any roads or trails until the litigation that's in place is resolved. It seems like some of these federal agencies are drunk with power, and they're kind of taking over and just shutting down great swaths of land. As senator, would you support Representative Lee's efforts here?
Yeah, absolutely.
Kind of a rhetorical question.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a good example where I think we would work well together. Senator Lee's got a good sense of rural Utah as well and the needs and some things that are happening, and I would love to be his companion on things like that.
Will you be a champion for rural Utah as you become senator for the entire state of Utah?
I love the question, and I'm going to say yes, but I want to give you something that actually backs that up. Anybody can say yes, right?
Right.
Like I'm sure you hear politicians all the time.
All the time.
Of course I will. But Steve, you've seen me for the last 2 years. And you've seen how many times I've been out to the basin, and I'd put that down as my track record. And the good thing is I think people all the way down to San Juan County and Emery County and Grand County and Carbon County, all my other counties would tell you they see me. I will tell you, I don't do it out of obligation. It's actually one of the most enjoyable parts of my job. And I like to joke and say, look, if I disappeared, Salt Lake County, Utah County wouldn't even miss me. But my rural counties would miss me because you have real needs, right, real interfaces with the federal government where you need help. So not only can I say yes to that, but I think I can back that up with my experience for the last 2 years in the basin, which I have just really enjoyed. I'm so glad that redistricting put the basin into my district. I feel very blessed.
I can attest to that. Every time you've come to the Uinta Basin, Representative Curtis, I've met with you, and we've either talked on the radio or I've spoken with you at a rally or a town hall meeting. So you are very concerned about your constituents here in eastern Utah.
Thank you.
The weaponization of government agencies, like the FBI, the DOJ, who else is there? The IRS, the BLM, as we talked about earlier, Forest Service and other agencies are attacking those who are Republican, especially Republican Trump supporters. Weaponization of government is a trend that is really frightening to a lot of people. What are your thoughts?
It's been very good to have Republicans in the majority in the House. And we have been, you've seen us, we've been dysfunctional on a lot of things. But one of the things that we've done, kind of quietly, is a tremendous pushback on this weaponization of government agencies. And you see some of the hearings we're holding and how we're doing a better job of holding these agencies accountable. And that's been one of the blessings of being in the majority, is in the majority you get to determine the subjects of the hearings, and we get to subpoena witnesses, and that was not happening when the Democrats had the majority in the House, and it's happening now. And so it's not perfect, but I can tell you that there's far more pushback now on these government agencies than there has ever been. And you've got folks like Jim Jordan and James Comer leading, you know, some of these committees where they're like a dog with a bone. They don't let go, and they get onto these things. And so I think there is some hope, and that's why it's important that we keep the House and keep the majority, is that gives us ability to push back on those agencies and hold those investigations.
As our congressman, you're probably more aware of the analytics of the political season going forward. 2024 will bring some changes in the White House, in the executive branch, and also in the House and the Senate. Do you think, number one, that the House can maintain its majority? Number two, can the Senate gain majority?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to answer the latter one is easier. Yes, we can gain the majority in the Senate, and I think everybody sees a path to that. I'm honest. I'm worried about the House. We've let the American people down on our budget. We've let the American people down on Just even you've seen how hard it is for us to even pick a leader. And that doesn't tend to inspire confidence in the American people. And so we've got a few short months to get our act back together, get this budget done, and show the American people that we actually can govern. And if we can do that, I predict we hold the House.
The new Speaker of the House, Mike, his name's just
Mike Johnson.
Mike Johnson. Yeah, Mike Johnson. Mike Johnson, are you confident in his abilities to pull this party together post-election or pre-election?
I'll tell you, it is a tall order. He's a very talented person. He's a good human being, too. He is a genuine, humble, God-fearing, humble being, human being. And so I do have confidence in him. But I'm telling you, the task at hand is massive. And, you know, we haven't been able to agree on hardly anything, and now we just have a few weeks to agree on a budget. So it's an all-hands-on-deck. I certainly will go back and support him all I can in getting this budget finished and doing the business of the American people. But there are those in our conference who are not of that same mindset and who want to plant landmines at every corner. And that's the frustrating thing, is when they do that, they actually just empower the other side, the Democrats. And instead of getting what they want as Republicans, they're really just empowering the Democrats. And that's what I'm seeing too much of right now in the House.
Congressman Curtis, thank you for the service that you've provided to the citizens of the Uinta Basin and to your entire district. Congressman Curtis has been a good representative to his constituents here in northeastern Utah, and we appreciate the service that you've provided us. If you've just tuned in and maybe not being aware, Congressman Curtis has thrown his hat in the ring. He indeed is running for the U.S. Senate seat being vacated by Senator Mitt Romney. And Congressman Curtis, we wish you all the best.
Thank you, Steve. That means a lot to me.
I'm Steve Evans, and this is News Talk 104.5 FM and AM 920 KVEL. Thanks for joining us.